This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Conservatives are not supposed to be cuddly or even particularly nice, wrote conservative icon George Will last fall at the height of national dismay over Hurricane Katrina response and Iraq chaos. They are, however, wrote Will, supposed to be competent. They are supposed to have an unsentimental commitment to meritocracy and excellence. And there's the rub that is increasingly, expensively, and fascinatingly plaguing the Bush administration, blasted even by its own party on the Katrina debacle, roughshod war planning, the Medicare drug mess, Harriet Myers deficits, never mind WMD, and now shooting straight. Up next on Point, performance issues, the White House, and the competence gap. We begin in Washington with John Harwood, national political editor for The Wall Street Journal. John, thanks for being with us.
Hey, Tom.
So first, on Chertoff, what's going on there? Is he bugging off? Did the Senate give him a pass? It was pretty rough yesterday. Are they giving him time to take a breath, or was it really a scheduling conflict?
I suspect it was a scheduling conflict. He's going to answer for the information in this report, and it's a very tough report. One of the things that's notable is that, you know, on this competence issue, you see Republicans looking to put a little distance between themselves and the Bush administration because, as we have discussed on this program before, they're the ones on the ballot this fall and the president's not.
How much air can Republicans put there? I mean, there is considerable hue and cry now, including from conservatives, on the deficit. There's been for a long time on the prosecution of the Iraq War. Of course, the Medicaid drug benefits got all kinds of complaints about it. But how much distance can Republicans in Congress and elsewhere afford to put between themselves and the president?
Well, not all that much, and they know that they're also their well-being this fall depends in part on what the president's approval rating is going to be. But they can display some independence. I noticed that one of the people out most visibly criticizing the Homeland Security Department and its performance on Katrina is Chris Shays, for example, a moderate Republican from Connecticut. Chris Shays has got a very tough campaign for re-election, as do other Republican members from northeastern states, and you're going to see those members saying, okay, I'm with the administration on some things, but I don't like the way they handle Katrina, I don't like the way they're rolling out the drug benefit, and other issues they're going to put some daylight there.
And then you've got conservatives rolling in from other venues. Bruce Bartlett, not in Congress, but a former Reagan policy advisor, a lot of attention coming for his forthcoming book, Imposter, How George W. Bush Bankrupted America and Betrayed the Reagan Legacy. Where's this fire coming from, John?
Well, that's the interesting thing about where the president finds himself right now, is that when your approval ratings shrink from around 50% to the low 40s, you find yourself facing fire from all sides. You've got a very aggressive, increasingly aggressive Democratic minority that's taking shots at him, and people at the left and right in his own party, in particular conservatives, are upset because the president's Social Security plan didn't pan out last year, and now we see the administration backing away not just from Social Security but also from tax reform, which is an issue that others wanted to sort of take up as their 2006 issue, and they're really looking at a small bore domestic agenda from this White House. And one of the things that conservatives had come to think of George Bush as is somebody who swung for the fences, who really went for big things. On domestic policy, he's not going for big things right now. He's mainly trying to preserve his capital and protect the one large enterprise that is still out there for him, and that is trying to achieve success in Iraq.
And on this issue of performance, John, how do you read it? We've seen conservative George Will even has gone back after the president on competence. In the heartland, you've got the St. Louis Post-Dispatch a couple months back saying the question of competence is front and center here. How do you read the problems the Bush administration has had, whether it's with FEMA or on Iraq war preparation? Do you see, you've watched for a long time, do you see something about the approach to governance that gets in the way of delivering on policy once it's established?
Well, I think you have to step back and look at how you define competence. Do you define competence, for example, as protecting the United States from another attack of the kind we experienced on 9/11? The administration can point to what's happened since then and say, we haven't been hit again. Is
right.
that an accident? They say no. It's hard for others to judge that. In the long run, if the administration, its approach to transforming the Middle East is vindicated by history, you'll say that was a competent decision-making process. Right now, it looks pretty ugly on the ground, and we don't know what the outcome is going to be. So it just depends on your frame of reference. Clearly, Republicans are much less than Democrats the party of government, and you may be seeing some of the fruits of that, for example, in the Medicare drug benefit, where they tried to achieve a Democratic goal using Republican ends by applying free market principles, and it's pretty messy at this moment.
I've got to ask you before we let you go, John, about Harry Whittington, the pal of Vice President Cheney, who Cheney shot by accident in Texas hunting. We see he's out of intensive care, reported stable now. How is the White House or the Vice President's office now dealing with that incident?
Well, first of all, everybody's happy that Harry Whittington is doing better.
Yes.
It is plain that this was not handled well by the White House. They didn't put out the word that the vice president had been involved in the shooting for almost 24 hours after it had happened. And the other thing that's pretty plain is that, you know, it's basic hunting safety that you know where you're shooting before you shoot. And Harry Whittington could have done better, but I suspect the vice president privately, he has not taken questions on this publicly, is chagrined at how he handled the situation out in that field there.
Well, glad that Mr. Whittington is doing better. Too bad about the bad shot there. John Harwood, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
John Harwood, national political editor for The Wall Street Journal. He spoke with us from Washington. I'm joined now from Washington by Thomas Mann, senior fellow in governance studies at the Brookings Institution. Thomas Mann, thanks very much for being with us.
Happy to join you.
Also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point News analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Jack, good to have you.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Mr. Mann.
Hello.
Thomas Mann, you've looked at a lot of administrations across a lot of kind of vectors. We're looking at performance and competence, governance. How's this one doing on execution?
I have to tell you, this administration looks to be among the least effective in producing policies, in administering policies, and producing outcomes they seek. In fact, what's interesting, especially interesting to me, is the contrast between the extraordinary political skills of this president and his team. They have managed to accomplish a great deal with very little in the way of any electoral mandate or public support, yet each of their major initiatives have been problematic, from Iraq to the Medicare prescription drug bill to fiscal policy, certainly to Katrina and its connection to homeland security.
Now, are you making an ideological assessment there or a performance assessment?
I think it's more performance than ideological. I bring up, but let me say that the roots of performance problems are planted very much in sort of policy design, and one of the major features of the first 5 years of this administration is that Congress has not played its appropriate role. They have not seriously scrubbed legislation, deliberated, asked difficult questions to ensure appropriate planning and policy design. We certainly see that in Iraq, where while we don't know the ultimate outcome, we do know that the inadequacy of planning for the post-Saddam regime. We know the same thing with respect to the Medicare prescription drug bill. We know the same thing, frankly, with respect to the series of tax cuts and spending increases that Congress approved.
So you're saying no check there from the Hill? Jack Beattie, join us. The thought was the MBA president, the cool, calm, collected, the executive, and with Congress in his pocket, it should have been easier, or at least easier.
It should have been, but look what happened after September 11th, and that too, of course, The 9/11 Commission called it a failure of imagination. Well, and they faulted the Clinton administration as well. But it was the failure specifically and narrowly of people in the Bush administration. They were focused on the wrong thing. States' threats, not stateless actors.
Now, from the Heritage Foundation, Michael Frank. He's vice president there, former director of communications for House Majority Leader Richard Armey of Texas. Michael Frank, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, how you doing, Tom?
We're good. We're trying to assess what's going on here. What's your sense? Let's put policy to the side for a moment, a nanosecond, on performance. How do you judge this administration?
Well, I think in general, it may not come as a surprise that somebody from the Heritage Foundation thinks that government is intrinsically limited in its ability to perform well. It comes as no surprise to the extent that there are mismanagement of funds after Katrina. I think I read today that 40% of the people who received the first round of assistance were actually doing so under false pretenses.
Pretty amazing number.
Yeah, Social Security cards and so on. And the government's model for response has been, I think, questioned by us and others along the way. The big point I guess I would make is that to a large extent, the failure of government is something that's built into the way the programs have been designed, the way the entitlement state has come about, and it's an awfully hard thing to unravel that. And I think we've seen, when we saw Katrina happen, we got a pretty vivid view of the failure of 40 years of what the government was trying to do to alleviate poverty. In New Orleans, the extreme poverty rate, which is 50% of the poverty rate or less, was twice the national average. About three quarters or so of the kids in the school system there were not able to read or do math.
And suddenly all that was on display. But do you just pull the blanket of the last 40 years over all that, Michael Frank? I mean, you know what Republicans in the House are on the warpath about right now is not that. It's about the emergency response and the lack of response. And it's very pointed. It's not 40 years. It's 4 years or five. And the Bush administrations and Michael Brown and Michael Chertoff. What do you see right there?
Well, a lot of the frustration that you find from Capitol Hill comes from the way in which the largesse was disseminated. Over $100 billion, much of it wasted, spent out under an old way of doing it. That's where the federal government was. It was not really asking much in return. Was not trying to set up the right kinds of incentives and demanded any form of personal responsibility. There was a lot of hope right after Katrina that Katrina would become a galvanizing moment where we could reconfigure the way government deals with not only disasters and emergencies, but also with the basic things. There was a lot of effort to try to create a response to the educational the dislocated kids that was even-handed across the board, including kids in private schools. To some extent, it succeeded, but not the way the reformers were hoping.
So you're going to go to the big picture. You're really not. Are you not prepared to look at the competence issues, performance issues within the bubble of the Bush administration?
Oh, I'm not going to say they did a great job responding. I think there's a lot to be desired. I guess my main point is that a lot of that's built into the DNA of the way the government's set up and the way the government is just designed to handle these things.
Thomas Mann, join that, if you will. This is just part of the way American government is structured, and any White House, is the implication there, would stumble.
To some degree, all administrations encounter difficulties in managing public programs and producing good performance. But it seems to me a hostility to government and a sharply sort of ideological perspective on problems not particularly helpful in the face of crisis. Any way you look at it, in FEMA was more effective in the previous administration than it has been in this administration, and that reflects a kind of lower priority given to the activity more generally. I think it's also the case that this administration, in contrast to previous ones, has had relatively little of a market for serious policy analysis. It's been not very interested in feedback that's reporting negatively. This administration puts a high premium on loyalty. The president is proud of the fact that he knows what he wants to do. Ahead of time, he sets out his goals clearly and says to people, go go execute them, but then there's a reluctance to give him bad news, to make him confront things he didn't foresee, to make adjustments quickly and on time. And I think all of those characteristics have really come to haunt governance during the Bush years and produced a series of what are now, if not utter debacles, at least it's sort of problematic areas where you could end up saying, God, this president was really a masterful politician, but as the head of government, he's not produced policies and performance that have improved the well-being of the country.
Jack, what about it? Should we set a low bar for this president because governing a great big country is difficult and the government is no doubt imperfect?
Let's look at one case, the Medicare prescription drug bill. Not the implementation, but the very legislation. The person who administered that for the administration is named Thomas Scully. He came out of the healthcare lobbying business. When Congress was debating this bill, the actuaries of Medicare made an estimate that it was going to cost, I think, $550 billion over 10 years. Mr. Scully, according to some sources, at White House pressure, threatened the actuary with firing if he told Congress the right number. Congress voted on a bill that was $150 billion less, they thought, and they only narrowly passed it. So, in effect, the legislation was passed on false pretenses because the actuary couldn't give the right information, and Republicans said, if we had known this, we would never have gone along with it. Now, what was Mr. Scully doing? At the same time, he was doing that with Congress. Hold back on that estimate. He was negotiating with five different healthcare providers and drug companies about his future employment. And he is now a major lobbyist in that industry. And he got a waiver from the HHS to do that. And, that's not an example of great society government. That's just, almost criminal incompetence and lying.
Straight ahead, please give us the facts. And without it, we've got this kind of gumbo of ethics issues and maybe tinged with ideology. And it's expensive. Let's let our listeners in here. Craig is calling from Herndon, Virginia. Hi, Craig. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. I don't think that there's just incompetence with the Bush administration. I think it's part of the manifestation of the plan by Grover Norquist and Karl Rove to eliminate government in Americans' lives. I think that there's incompetence with people like, the most glaring example is former FEMA Director Brown in his response to Katrina. But I think others play as incompetent, but just let programs fall into abuse and disuse and underfunding and everything as part of the plan to opportunity for the government to say, well, they're not working, this is what's wrong with government, and we should just eliminate them.
Let us look at that. Michael Frank, you represent yourself a kind of wish that government would be smaller. You articulate that this morning. We get it. Does the path to that have to have performance problems that come with it? Our caller says, Craig says, well, this is deliberate. Let it fail so it can be done away with. How do you respond?
Let me just, what Mr. Beatty said, I'll just respond in this way, that the same actuary, Mr. Foster, who was under the pressure from Scully, and I think Mr. Beatty makes a great case against what Tom Scully did and how it all unfolded, there was a hearing in the Ways and Means Committee afterwards to look into it, and an interesting exchange between Chairman Bill Thomas of Ways and Means and Mr. Foster revealed that in 1997, Nancy Ming DeParle, who was then Mr. Scully's predecessor in the Clinton administration, did precisely the same thing when there was a major Medicare reform bill moving through Congress at that time.
Tamp down the cost, you're saying.
And you're right. And he privately called Thomas at the time and said, this is wrong, what do I do about it? And he reminded him of that during the hearing, and he acknowledged that, yes, this is not the first time this has happened. So my point in a way is that these problems are repetitive, they're endemic to the way the government works, and
is that a defense of an administration, of any administration, that a previous administration did it too? I mean, is that really what you want to...
it's not to justify it. It's to say that this is not unique to this particular administration. I would cast the blame the net a lot wider. And frankly, the argument about Grover Norquist and Karl Rove, that they're purposely trying to sabotage otherwise efficient and effective forms of government programs and interventions, I think is ludicrous, because the track record does show that, that this has not really worked. You know, every study of the Head Start program, which is a sacred third rail type of a program, indicates that we could do a whole lot better creating literacy and numeracy for kids age 3 and 4. Yet there's such an institutional structure now in support of the current way of doing things that you just can't really reform that program. So
and yet there's a kind of mixed message to the country when the administration that's trumpeting that view has its own competence issues along the way, or as the gears are shifting or trying to be shifted. It's a tricky scene. Paul's calling from Boston. Hi, Paul, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm supportive of the Bush administration, what they're trying to do. I think the most important thing that they're doing is trying to change the relationship of the Western cultures in the Middle East.
So do you see all the rest of this as little stuff, as just you know, persiflage?
I think a lot of people in the country are fat on freedom. And it's very popular to be against the government. And so we nitpick on a lot of things. I'm not saying...
Is it nitpicking on Katrina? Nitpicking on body armor?
I can't really say that's nitpicking, but it goes across the board on a range of things. Obviously, they made some mistakes on Katrina, but we have that commentary going on right now.
Right. So,
they're going to learn from that.
Maybe that's a big learning exercise, but look to the big goals you're saying, and you're happy there. I want to turn now to Washington and John Fortier. He's a research fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. He studies the president and continuity of government. Mr. Fortier, thanks for joining us.
Great. Thanks for having me.
President Bush taking some flack from inside and outside his party right now, and this performance issue is right out there. What do you say to it?
Well, clearly Bush has had a tough fifth year of his presidency and is down in the polls and has some critics of his own party. I guess if you look at this as a big presidency, just for the president's own terms, he said 9/11 will define not only my presidency but presidencies after mine. And the president has been very aggressive in pushing an agenda that addresses why 9/11 happened. Now, you may not like every aspect of it, and lots of change causes bumps along the way. But this president has been aggressive in a way that I think is appropriate, and some of the things that we criticize him for, we'd have to think about what the alternative would be, where we'd be if we'd sat a little more standing pat after 9/11 with a threat that's still just as great out there.
But should that give a president a pass for screw-ups? And I'm looking at George Will here. He says, what happened to meritocracy and excellence? He said, nobody sacked in all the failures around 9/11 in Iraq. He says, in Washington today, there is no serious penalty for serious failure, hence the multiplication of failures. So, I mean, you're painting with the big brush again, but don't the details matter? I mean, these are multi-billion-dollar screw-ups.
Well,
there are some
large mistakes President made, and I think your point about the president not bringing new blood into this administration, especially into his White House, is a good one. His initial White House, I think, was a good combination of people he knew from Texas as well as people from Washington, but really it hasn't changed since then, and so I think that would certainly enhance his presidency. Certainly the war in Iraq is what we'll judge him by, whether that is turning the corner now and ultimately ends up the way that Bush wanted to in a much shorter way. That's a key. And, a second-term domestic agenda, which he had very big plans for and overshot and didn't happen. And finally, Katrina. So I think we can point to these things. But the president, in terms of his major goal, his major focus, we see him return to again and again, is the protection of America and the war on terror. And we've done a lot of things. We've moved big institutions in big directions, and I think that the president should be commended for that.
Well, Thomas Mann, on that front, I mean, the trouble at FEMA, which is under Homeland Security, the criticism of Chertoff is not exactly confidence-inducing. Yes, and thank heavens, there has not been another major attack. On the other hand, should we feel comforted by this? I mean, we're looking, Bruce Bartlett, the former Reagan official, saying here there's an anti-intellectual distrust of facts and analysis and an obsession with secrecy, that doesn't inspire confidence.
It shouldn't inspire confidence. In fact, it's consistent with what I argued earlier, that there was little market in this administration for serious policy analysis, that and loyalty tends to trump everything else. I mean, I think anyone looking in response to the last couple of questions, looking at the goal of transforming the Middle East or of back home of providing genuine homeland security, would say wonderful. But anyone looking at what has transpired since then would be appalled on both fronts.
So applaud the goal, but
not made any progress, and there are reasons for that in the policy designs, in the unwillingness to bring in new information to adapt and adjust policies. I think we've seen a lot of failures of performance that are built into the very qualities that John praised. That is, this is a president with big plans and big ambitions. He's decisive and he's consistent. And all of those qualities, which have produced some considerable political victories, have also produced very problematic policies and administration of those policies, and now we're suffering from the consequences of those.
John Fortier, we just got you for another half minute. Do you sit with your buddies in private and say, we love these goals, but gosh, couldn't we have done a better job with this? We'd look better as a Republican Party.
Well, certainly the president could be in better shape politically now, but I guess I, as a big picture matter, think that the president has taken on some very big things and moved a lot of mountains, moved us to looking at things less from a law enforcement perspective and more from a national security perspective, and that's caused a lot of criticism.
Thomas Mann, you've looked at the history. I mean, look back. Is there a way to put a performance quotient on a particular administration?
It's very difficult to do. Listen, just the presence of almost continuous efforts to reform the bureaucracy suggests that we're never entirely satisfied with the administration of programs and its performance. Certainly, the Clinton administration had a big focus on this. Al Gore was the leader of the effort, and earlier administrations had done so as well. But I think it is fair to say that some administrations that sort of basically believe government can play a constructive role tend to look for ways of making the system work better. They put a little higher premium on attracting political appointees who know something of the work and can manage them effectively. I'd give you, in the Clinton administration, Donna Shalala, who stayed the entire two terms and was a masterful public manager of the Department of Health and Human Services. Others come in and they're really looking to change what government does, to have it do less. That means they're more likely to appoint people who share their ideological views, and there's a little less priority on actually making the programs work. And I think the current Bush administration very much fits into the latter. It's got big goals. It wants to transform, but ironically, its big goals have been undone by the very factors we're talking about here today, whether it's in Iraq, whether it's with the reform of Medicare, whether it's with broad fiscal policy.
Jack Beattie, can you have a goal of cutting government back or curtailing it and providing good government at the same time? Are those really mutually exclusive?
Question is, for whom is the government provided? And I think that what we've left out here is the pipeline in the Bush administration. These programs, many of them, have been run for the benefit of constituency groups. The Medicare prescription drug bill is a boondoggle for insurance companies that essentially are being subsidized to get into a market that didn't exist before. Energy bill, on and on and on. Again and again, we've seen this pattern where the what drives the program is let's pay off to a Republican constituency group through public funds, through bills. The Toledo Blade, of all people, just ran recently a multi-part series on the boondoggles that the pioneers, the big fundraisers for Bush, have received from this administration. They raised about $27 million and they got back about $1 billion, not only in contracts but in relaxation of mining regulations, of energy regulations, of timber regulations, of defense contracting regulations. That's the scandal here. And George Akerlof, the Nobel Prize winning economist at Berkeley, said on our program, talking about this, that the Bush administration's economic policy is, quote, looting, taking public funds and willy-nilly giving it to constituency groups. And that's what they're caring about more than let's make this work. That's why there's been an exodus of experienced people from the EPA. They've just gone out the door. Same from the Food and Drug Administration. A charge after charge that they're working cozy with the drug companies. Treasury Department. On and on and on.
John Fortier, what about every administration looks after its constituents, I guess. But with Abramoff sort of front and center here, there's a ring to this which is uncomfortably close to the courts right now.
Well, first, let me say something about Tom Mann's point about people coming into government, good people. I think it's a mixed case in the Bush administration. The Bush administration clearly, I don't think, can be faulted for having strong people in its foreign policy and defense policy arena. You may not agree with what they do, but certainly he had the A-team of Republicans, and this was a very hands-on administration in that respect.
Well, strong on ideology, but then you've got, I mean, Chuck Hagel just saying, my God, what's happened in Iraq? You know, what have we wrought here? It's not as if the prosecution of that war was faultless.
Well, again, I agree with that, but I think it's a matter of a question of some very, very talented people with some very, very big goals. And ultimately, if Iraq doesn't turn out the way the president hopes, I think his presidency will be judged as a failure. But if the president, if it is going in the right direction, even though it's taken much longer and a much greater cost than the president had anticipated, I think he can point to a success. So I don't think it comes from a lack of good people or in that arena. It's a question of whether you think his goals are too ambitious and whether he's been able to accomplish them.
Maybe, but here's Republican Hagel saying, you know, no planning, no preparation, no sense of consequences of where we're going, of how to get out, went in without enough men, no exit strategy. That's a Republican critique of performance.
Well, again, let's just see. Let's see 2 years down the road where we are. Have we turned a corner or not? I think that's a reasonable question, and we will find out before the end of the Bush administration whether that's the case.
And what about Jack's looting charge? That's a big word.
Well, certainly, I think the Abramoff scandal is a very big scandal in Washington, one of the biggest lobbying special interest scandals we've had. Right now, primarily, we're looking at the Congress and a number of practices there that I think have been very troubling, and especially the way the House of Representatives has been run. The administration, I think, will be brought into this more as we hear about lower level people involved. I don't think this administration is particularly different than others in terms of special interests and giving things away. I think they're just different special interests in different administrations. But I do think that Jack Abramoff is a problem for Republicans in general, and particularly a problem for congressional Republicans.
Let's hear from our listeners. Dennis is calling from Ayer, Massachusetts. Hi, Dennis. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to point out that can anybody seriously doubt that if George Bush were the CEO of a private corporation, he wouldn't have been fired long ago? And this from an administration which trumpets the need for self-reliance, being accountable, that free market capitalism is the way to go.
But, Dennis, he was not fired. He was reelected.
That's right. But if you're, I guess that's a good point, but he should have been fired, I guess, is the case.
If he could gudge it just on performance terms, but then there's politics and there's policy and there's big goals, as we're hearing today, where do you see the balance?
Clearly, Karl Rove has managed to get him elected twice, and there is part of that, I think, is the fault of the Democrats, who have clearly not been able to take advantage of all the mistakes that George Bush has made. But I think that what should be looked at here also is, well, let's try to talk about what his successes have been.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a frightfully short list, if there's anything on the list. And after $440 billion have been spent in Iraq, 2,000 dead, 15,000 seriously wounded, he ran on Social Security as being one of his prime goals. That went nowhere.
The Democrats seem to applaud that in the State of the Union message on Iraq. John Fortier says, give it a couple years. If he succeeds, he'll look like a hero.
But he's not going to succeed. And this is with a Republican controlled Senate, a Republican-controlled House.
Yeah, and it sounds like if you were on the board of directors of this private company, you'd have him out, but then the vote didn't. Let me take a call from Beverly Hills, California. Charles is calling. Hi, Charles. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I think that most serious, intelligent people that would have an overview of this administration would say it's a complete failure. And I think that the professional Republicans are really interested in somewhat glorifying this administration as much as they can in an effort to retain an identity for the future of the Republican Party. I don't think that anyone can take this presidency seriously as a success or having succeeded in anything.
But a year and a couple of months ago, it was reelected. That's a reaffirmation.
Well, the Republicans are brilliant at elections and poor about governance, and that would be my analysis of that situation.
There's a bottom line from Beverly Hills. Let's get a call from Alexandria, Virginia. Alexander, you're on the air.
Hi. Quite frankly, this administration is both ridiculous and frightening. If you want to know why they were reelected on a bunch of lies. There is no competence here, and I think looting is a very great term. Quite frankly, the picture that I have in my mind of this administration is the famous line from The Wizard of Oz, pay no attention to the man behind the screen.
But if George Bush wants to change the way America is governed, wants a smaller government, has big goals around security and changing the Middle East, aren't there bound to be bumps along the way, Alexander?
Bumps? I think we're talking Grand Canyons here. They simply don't know what they're doing over there. And as I said, Karl Rove is very good at getting people elected, but they aren't listening to anybody but themselves. And what you're doing like that is spitting in the wind. It comes right back in your face.
Could be tough this fall, or maybe not. They've come around before. Chartis is calling from Cohasset, Massachusetts. Hi, Chartis. You're on the air.
Hello. Hi. How are you?
Good. What do you
think? First of all, thanks a lot for allowing this very reasoned discourse, which is rather different from what we get in the media usually. And I think that's my main point, is that I think that we've come in our country to a point where criticism is being labeled as being unpatriotic, and there's a sort of gotcha mentality out there, and it's very partisan, and we can't have in our Congress anymore a dialogue, but you know, with the two parties there sort of discussing policy. It's all a case of being loyal to the commander-in-chief, or you know, trying to get the Republicans out and the Democrats in.
But Chartist partisanship works both ways. Supporters of Bush say, give the guy a break. He's got some big goals here. It hasn't been perfect, but he's trying to do something large.
But he's not he's the chief executive, but our democracy is based on a three-part government, and the Congress plays a very good role, and it's by its very nature going to have members of both parties in it, and they should be allowed to discuss things without being accused of being unpatriotic if they question foreign policy issues. And the Republicans should be allowed to put forward their agenda if they wish to and have it be properly critiqued. That's just not happening now.
Well, I'll say amen to that. I mean, take the record, put it out there, let everybody have their say. John Fortier, what are you hearing in this line of criticism?
Well, I think you are seeing the congressional, the legislative branch asserting itself more, even among congressional Republicans. You had a first term where the president was able to lead his own party more or less along points on his agenda, and you do see rebellion from Republicans as well as much stronger criticism from Democrats. You see things like immigration, on spending. So the president, I think, has lost something of his first term luster, where he was a successful Democratic domestic president. You may not agree with his what he accomplished, but he certainly was one who was able to get things done. He certainly weakened in that area, and it's probably a more natural stance that the other branch is asserting itself more independently of the president.
Thomas Mann, do you see a lasting black eye for the GOP in these competence failures, self-described, on Katrina, on aspects of war prosecution, on the drug plan?
I think more important than what I think, increasingly Republicans think that is a danger, and that's why you're seeing an awakening on Capitol Hill after 5 years of sleeping through history. Congress has really been the broken branch during these years, but now in both House and Senate, on the majority side, you're having individual Republicans speak up. You're beginning to get some real oversight of failures, whether it's with Katrina or the problematics in Iraq, or frankly fiscal policy, where if a goal is smaller government, we certainly haven't seen it. We've seen extraordinary growth in government during the Bush years, along with tax cuts. So yes, I think the potential for a black eye is there, sufficiently black that it could put the Democrats back in the majority in Congress, and that's why we're seeing the stirrings that we are on Capitol Hill.
Jack Beatty, I have to say, on that front, I mean, government spending up twice the rate of growth under Bush as under Clinton. So the smaller government argument doesn't wash so well here. I mean, there's more being spent, not less. So why shouldn't performance be better than ever?
Yes. Well, of course, conservatives would say there's the problem. Anytime government does anything, it's going to screw it up. The bigger, the worse. But, you know, in so many of these programs, I mean, John DiIulio, I think, gave us some important testimony. He was the head of the faith-based initiative for the first couple of years. Mm. And when he left the White House, he said, there is no discussion about policy formation. There is no serious discussion about how to make things work. Everything is politics. Everything is Karl Rove. And we got a picture of that in the hearings last week when Michael Brown said, you know, we did very well in Florida when they dealt with a disaster down there. Why? That was 2004. That was an election year. They spread money around there like it was candy. And that's to deliver that state for the Bush campaign. That's a politically motivated competence.
Well, it says something when we look to Michael Brown as our measure of competence. But there we are. Politics, performance. We've got to have performance at some level. Thomas Mann at the Brookings Institution, John Fortier at the American Enterprise Institute. Thanks to both of you for being with us.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Good to have you. And Jack Beatty, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.